It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today we're heading to Finland to speak to co-directors Juuso and Jukka. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about your film, Heavy Trip. And before we go into any details about how you made that, does one of you want to give a brief synopsis to what Heavy Trip is all about?
It's a comedy film about a death metal band who set up for a trip to play at a big festival in Norway, and they've never played a gig before in their lives, although they've had the band for 14 years. that's the very short version.
And it very much turns into I'd call it like a coming of age as much as it is about a rock band. Yeah, I guess.
It's a story of these guys finding themselves.
With a liberal amount of absurd comedy.
Yeah, some of that too, yeah.
What was the kernel of the idea that sort of led to Heavy Trip becoming a film that I saw, you know, just last week?
So we had a really good time making a short film called Impaled Rectum when we were studying in school. And after school, we started, like, we knew we wanted to make movies, so naturally we started writing like a sci-fi movie about Jesus in a post-apocalyptic future, and then realized that we might not get like the hundreds of millions for funding for this movie as our like first feature movie. So Jukka got the idea about the short film we made years before that. We had a lot of fun doing it. And because we live in the metal capital of Finland, Oulu, we had done like a lot of music videos for metal bands. So like the themes were present in our work. As soon as Jukka like said that, you know, we might have enough stuff here for like a feature movie, I instantly thought that this is a good idea. Like, there's so much like stuff to write and say about metal music, with like the images and the like quirky people. And I don't know. Do you want to add something here, Jukka?
Yeah. The idea kind of. I'm not. Juuso is our like actual metal head. I'm not really a big metal fan. I do listen to it, but not like that. But what was the idea in the beginning that was kind of interesting for me is that we have people listening to metal music, and like my experience of those guys is usually that they're pretty like gentle dudes, really friendly, and they have some really nice characteristics which are really in a contrast to the music what they make. I think that was one of the kind of, there's something interesting here. We have these really nice dudes who look really scary, and to listen to this music that sounds even scarier.
Yeah,
I think that was one of the like main points where it started. And like Juuso said, there's a lot of metal bands in the city we live in, and those, and we were making music videos for those bands, and they were, and that was the experience we had. Like, what a nice dudes, how nice guys, and so friendly and kind of gentle feeling guy.
And there's something funny about, like, you can scream on stage, but then you can be like a really quiet and shy person off stage. And there's a, like Jukka said, there's a weird contrast with like the really, really nice, funny people doing loud, violent music.
I'm reading a book at the moment called Satanic Panic, which looks at the 80s period of Satanic Panic in America. And the section about music is really, and movies, is really interesting, because the 80s was full of, you know, the rock metal as the outsider, as the embodiment of evil. And then there'd be a kid who would be, you know, into rock music, and he'd be the outsider of the town. But in your film, I thought it was interesting, as a conscious, is your band are quite cool in amongst themselves, and the kind of people that ridicule them are the numbskulls, are the idiots of the place.
Yeah, it's, we wanted to set the guys to some place where they're kind of outsiders. Outsiders, which they are, and we wanted to kind of give them a setting. I'm from a small town myself, so kind of know that set of mind that people have in those places. Also, we didn't want to demonize the people too much, that there are some people who kind of give the boys hard time. But like, yeah, it's being in a metal band and like growing your hair long, and you definitely make stand out in a small town, even in Finland. And this has
even
been
even in Oulu.
And this has been funny. We've been touring a lot of festivals back when it was still possible, and we went to a lot of countries, and a lot of metalheads came to see the film. And like one of the questions in many countries, like we went to Romania, we went to Israel, and there's like metal fans from those places that where the metal fandom is pretty obscure, like in Israel. And the guys were like, they've heard that Finland is like a metal capital of the world. We have
like a promised land of metal.
Promised land of metal. We have the most metal bands per capita in the world is in Finland. So these people, like Israeli youngsters, metalheads, and they were like, I thought like everybody in Finland listens to metal, that you don't have to listen to this, like people throwing slurs at you for having the long hair and stuff like that. And people were kind of like, they were disappointed because they thought like in every town in Finland, everybody is a metalhead. This was something that we found out about being a metalhead outside of Finland.
Why is there such an affinity with metal in Finland?
I don't know. Maybe it's the sunless long winters of darkness and depression. I don't know. I've heard the question many times, but I don't really have an answer.
Because I'm more familiar with, my wife's family's from Norway, and obviously Norway has an affinity with black metal for sure, you know, in terms of what happened during the late 80s, early 90s. And that was a phenomenon that was sort of to one country. And a lot of people talked about the fact that it was related to the long winters and the short summers. And that was, you know, your music reflected it, as it were.
Mm. Yeah, there's probably some studies being done, but I've not heard what are the actual answers to these things. I don't know. It's something about, I think it's, we're kind of Finnish people, a bit melancholic. I think that comes from the eastern side of Finland. And I don't know what's the rest. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I have no idea. I think in the 80s, like metal or rock, hard rock, whatever it was called at that time, it really hit Finland hard. And like bands like Metallica and Megadeth were really big amongst the young generation, and a lot of those kids set up their own bands. And I guess like people setting up bands give an example to other kids. Okay, let us set up a band. I think it just kind of grows by itself. Mm. So,
When you're expanding this story from your show, Impel Rectum, which obviously for those people that obviously, yeah, Impel Rectum is obviously is also the name of the band in Heavy Trip, which I'm guessing is why you called the short film the name. What were some of the storytelling challenges, sort of expanding the short format into a feature format?
Ooh, a lot. Well, I think we took very little from the short film we made, mostly the characters. Mm-hmm. The story is completely different in short. In the short, the story was that they have this really underground death metal, black metal, whatever band that takes themselves really seriously. And the vocalist in the band was a big fan of these artists whose music is kind of Finnish Schlager music, which is completely not streetwise. So it's the other, so in that film, the main character who's the vocalist doesn't share his secret to the other band that he really loves this other genre of music that is completely not metal.
Yeah.
So we didn't really take anything else from the characters from that film. So we started pretty much from nothing, from like an empty table. I think the idea was that the first thing we wrote down is we want to make a feel-good film about the death metal band. So that was the idea, to make it like feel good films are something that are not really made in Finland so much.
Okay, the melancholy gets into the films as well, does it?
Finnish cinema tends to be on the dark side of things. Yeah. Like,
what was the saying that if you're not sure about whether you should kill yourself or not, go see a Finnish movie and I don't know what the punchline was.
My last before your film, my last Finnish film was the one that played at Cannes, the Dogs Don't Wear Pants.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that one,
but heard a lot of good things about it.
Which fits the model. It's about a man who loses his wife in the first 5 minutes, and he goes, he descends into S&M as a way of coping with his grief of the loss.
Mm. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Okay. I think that it had a positive vibe.
No, the outcome was really positive, but yeah, its first half of it was not a happy place. Some of the choices you made were really inspired in terms of using that small town backdrop and the heavy metal, because once kids dress up in the biker jacket and the long hair, it's a fairly easy uniform to get into, and that's already in contrast to town. But then for the lead singer to be cycling around on an old bicycle is just funny in of itself. You know, just those moments is like, he's not riding in on Hell's Chariot, is he, when he's knocking about town? I mean, and that's really simple ideas that really enhanced your belief that, you know, there was a very great separation between what they did in the barn and then the rest of their life in the village.
Mm. There's not really any fantasy about riding an old bike in the countryside. Like, A lot of feedback I've heard is when you're in a band, when you're in a metal band, and when you live somewhere that's not a capital city, and there's a lot of small towns. So when you're a small town metal band guy, you always ride like a crummy old bike to like band rehearsal. So a lot of like musicians have related to like riding grandma's bike in those scenes to, you know, between home and. Where the band is, so.
But what I mean by that though is there's for your character there's no pretensions of trying to be cool, as it were. There's no rock star pretensions to it, is there?
No, and I think one of the like main issues with the film, which makes it, I hope, good, is that these guys are really sweet. They're really sweet and they're really enthusiastic about their music. And I think one thing that makes metal music a good subject here is that I think playing metal music is like playing...
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Jazz or some other music where there is very little, economic potential. So you won't get rich or famous by playing some like really niche metal music. So, and I think that proves that our characters are doing it for the love of the music, and they are really into it, and they really do get kicks of that music, and they're not really kind of, okay, let's set up a band so we can get girls or we'll get rich playing this music. And I think that makes metal music a really good subject.
From the look and feel of the film, with the conversations with in terms of cinematography, talking to, is that Harry Ratti? Do I pronounce that Harry Ratti?
Yeah, Harry Ratti.
What were your conversations about the look and feel of Heavy Trip?
It needed to be like a colorful and summery and warm and timeless and kind of vintage. We would try to avoid stuff that'll link the movie's time to like something that we know that we didn't want to like show high tech stuff. And I think a lot of the cinematography was also we had to shoot with a very small budget, so like even that's been thought of, like you like a lot of action takes place in like wide shots, and we try to do as much as we can with as few as shots as we could, just to, because we didn't have a lot of money.
Basically fewer shots gets you to the end of the film quicker, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to use as few shots per scene as we can, pretty much, because like every different like shot or composition, it always takes time and money that we don't have.
So, in what way did your cinematographer sort of? I mean, I had a similar conversation with Lucky McKee about The Woman. He talked about how shots he wanted, and then the cinematographer said, well, if we do this one shot, we could do this, 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 and this, and then we don't have to do three or four setups. Was there any examples like that you could talk about?
Well, most of it was like doing a finished film is usually, like you said, it's the schedule is really, really tight, so you have to really work. But yeah, we had ideas that we wanted to make, and doing these kind of ensembles, shots where we have all the guys in the band. And like you said, like it's funny just to have like some metalhead driving a bicycle, and then we just do shots of these four guys standing on a road somewhere in the middle of forest. And that makes it just funny to see these guys standing somewhere. They're kind of out of their element. And as Yusu said, we wanted to make it look like colorful and bright and very like it's summer and it's warm. And that's also a strong contrast to the music that these guys portray. So they're clad in black, and one of them has a corpse paint under his face. And like putting these characters in a really kind of mundane environments kind of creates comedy in itself.
I think we're used to seeing like metal stuff that's desaturated or tinted blue or black and white, something like that. So it was we wanted to put as much color as we can, because watching a lot of metal music videos, they're not very like cheerful and colorful.
Talking of color, how many buckets of blood did you use on this film?
I think it was pretty much, well, it's mostly that one scene that we had to have.
But it was a lot.
It was a lot, yeah. It was a whole barrel.
Syrup and
I don't know how many hundred liters, or I think you thought of talk about gallons there, but yeah, it was a lot. And that was something like, I think they used like some kind of food dye, and then they used syrup to get the like thickness.
In terms of you shooting on a low budget, as we get into the sort of second half and into the final act of the movie, you really pump up the action. You know, there's a lot more people involved. There's a lot more going on. You know, for the first half of the film, we're very much in rooms with people. It's conversations. All right, there's the little gig scenes and stuff, but essentially it's quite controlled. But then you suddenly branch out and we've got car chases, we've got weaponry. So what were some of the challenges for achieving some of the more high-octane elements of the film on a budget you were working to? And have you got any tips and tricks for achieving a lot with a little?
Avoid Norway.
Yeah, Norway is really expensive. Yeah, I think it's
avoid Norway. Why?
Yeah, I think it's the number two countries where things cost a lot. But yeah, I don't know. It was like we spent a very little money on the first half, and then we had to use all the rest of the budget on the second. But yeah, still, it was like I remember we had days and okay, we had this shot, and okay, let's change the lens and like make one shot more. And somebody like our AD comes there, and there's no time for a lens change, which takes about 3 minutes that we have to go forward. Okay, now we're not okay. Let's go. It's just like stuff like that. But yeah, it was big, and we had a lot of crew in Norway, and we had extras, and we had stuntmen, and we have VFX coordinators and stuff like that. So we had those few days that we made all the big explosions and cars falling down and people shooting guns, stuff like that. So those were the big days. Those were the funny.
What do you think with that experience? Then what do you think you learned from that as directors, having to work with those kind, you know, with coordinators on that, you know, stunt and VFX coordinators? What did it teach you about film?
Well, you need to do your homework really well. You have to it's all done in pre-production, really. But
yeah,
you just go there and do the film. You're kind of just executing the schedule when you're on set, which is of course kind of boring. But you do all the creative decisions in the pre-production, and you have to be really kind of decisive. Okay, we're gonna your storyboard, and we're gonna do these shots, and we're gonna do them just like this. So there's very small scale to kind of be creative on these budgets. It's like, it's absurd when you hear they were shooting this film and they shot this scene for 2 weeks or whatever. Like we have an hour and a half. I mean, it has to be done in an hour and a half. And it's absurd that you hear, okay, Kubrick shot this thing for 2 months, and like not here. Kubrick would never make films in Finland, or he would have probably made one, and then he would ran out of money, and then they drove him out. Because,
yeah, it became a short film.
Another thing with all the VFX stuff and like that, it's you have to get kind of plan ahead. And we, of course, me and Jules will be doing a lot of CGA stuff with music videos and short films and commercial stuff and like that. So we were familiar with all the how we use them and how they use blue green screens, and we kind of understood the basics. So it was easier for us. Mm. So okay, we need this shot, and then we need the background plates. And I think it was one of the darkest days. And we're shooting in Norway, and we had, you know, we have like 60 people coming to Norway. It's hugely expensive. We have like a week to shoot there. We have these amazing like locations that we're going to shoot in. We have these beautiful mountains in the background. And in Finland, we don't have any mountains, so it's very spectacular.
Yeah, it's a myth. I've found out this. That there's no mountains, is there really?
Stuff in Finland and Norway look completely different. So anyway, we're in Norway and we've looked out these locations, and we're going out on a shoot, and that morning it's completely cloudy, and there's this huge mist, and you can't see anything. We go to the location and in the background, you can't see the mountains at all.
Yeah, it's like shooting a
wall. So you could have been in Finland.
Yeah. So what we did, we set up green screens in mountains of Norway, and we just shot all the stuff with green screens, and then we added the mountains in post-production. So we could have shot that in a backlot somewhere in Helsinki in Finland. And that felt so bad at that time. Of course, it was really nice when the post-production did their CGI stuff. You can't really tell those ones are added in the post-production. But on the day of the shoot, it was so depressing being there. Like, we can't see anything.
I tell you what, are you familiar with the phrase, if the mountain won't come to Muhammad, you go to the mountain?
Yeah.
So you went to the mountain and then you had to bring it a second time.
Yeah.
So I'll have to disagree with Jukka about being creative, because I think like the lesson is that you have to be creative. So because when stuff goes to hell, you have to like figure out a way to like make it work anyway, or make the most of it, or like the mistakes that are going to happen, you have to somehow write them into the movie. So yeah, you have to plan things very carefully, but stuff is going to go wrong anyway, and then you have to like deal with it somehow.
Yeah, Brian De Palma talks about that as being like a tunnel. It's like once you start shooting the movie, the only way out is the other end of the tunnel. You can never come back.
Yeah, it is true. Yeah, at some point it feels like a tunnel where you can't see the other end.
You just hope it'll appear at some point.
Yeah.
Am I right? Is the final destination in the movie, the festival in Norway, that's a real festival that you work with there?
No.
Okay.
Completely made up.
Yeah.
And so you in your low budget movie, you brought in a load of extras to make it look like a festival.
We brought in maybe like 80 extras.
Well, that's off you, because it seemed like a bigger event to me on the film.
And then we used, what is that called? Crowd.
Like duplicated the same people.
Yeah.
1,000 times.
Okay.
Yeah. In the end, we had really, so we were shooting actually the outside. How was it? Yeah. We had like one exterior shot of the festival, which is, I don't know what it was. In Norway, we just saw it. I think it's like some kind
random
of
oil, fish factory or something like that.
Fish factory or oil refinery or something that looked like, okay, that looks cool. And let's just take some drone shots of it. And then we just added some flames coming out of the pipes. And like, I don't know how that's a, that's a metal festival scene. But then we got some of the interior shots in Finland in I think it was a big warehouse.
Like a shipyard. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. We're having a shipyard. Yeah.
It just gives me to say thank you very much for giving your time on the BritFlix podcast.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we'll go back on writing Heavy Trip 2, which we were actually doing while we took this phone call.
Yeah, sorry we were late.
Yeah. Let me rock you. Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.